WFM with Green Farm. Fuel your day with Green Farm's new high-protein cooked chicken breast fillets. 100% natural and packed with flavour.
I have to say, despite all the abuse I give them, it is always a pleasure to chat to Chris and Kira. Thank you to them for keeping the Flashback Friday tunes flying. It is Friday the 10th of September. Good evening from Damien O'Mara. You are very welcome to Game On. Coming up today, Kerry Grace and Hell Week recruit Darren O'Sullivan tells us whether it'll be heaven for Mayo or Tyrone in Croke Park tomorrow.
There are smiles for Mayo. It'll count for nothing in however many weeks' time if they can't win the All-Ireland. But they have beaten Dublin for the first time in 9 years.
The game is all over, Martin. Tyrone are in the All-Ireland football final. Tyrone have beaten the hot favourites, the Kingdom of Kerry, in a dramatic, pulsating, passionate, unbelievable All-Ireland football semi-final that went to extra time.
Hopefully tomorrow's will live up to the same sense of expectation. To soccer, as Ole Gunnar Solskjaer confirms that Ronaldo will be on the pitch at Old Trafford tomorrow, we will preview all of the weekend's soccer action at home and cross-channel with Paul Curry and Fergal Brennan.
This is why I'm here. I'm not here for vacation, or I'm here to win again. I'm capable, me and my teammates. I'm ready to go. And I think it's a good chance for me, for the supporters, for the club, you know, to give one step ahead. So I'm ready, and I think I will be a huge thing.
Can't say his modesty hasn't died down since he's been away. In racing, Don McLean is in studio. We're going to preview the Irish Champions weekend, and Stephen Higgins will be with us as well on what will be an exciting conclusion to the US Open in tennis.
Game on 2FM.
So all of that to come between now and 7 o'clock. You can text us. Our number is 51552. You can tweet at GameOn2FM. So we have a very, very busy program. To bring you, as mentioned, we're going to be chatting to Darren O'Sullivan about the All-Ireland football final in a minute. If you are interested in the Camogie finals on Sunday, rest assured we had a very comprehensive preview of that on Wednesday. So you can get that conversation with Aisling Connolly and Aoife Murray on the podcast. We have plenty to look forward to. They have dealt their hands in terms of the All-Ireland final. Mayo and Tyrone, the Mayo manager James Horan has made two changes to the side for Saturday's All-Ireland football final clash with Tyrone. First year senior star Enda Hessian replaces Owen McLaughlin. His jaw, of course, was broken in the semi-final victory over Dublin. Brian Walsh starts in place of Darren McHale. He was substituted after 27 minutes against Dublin. Plenty of speculation over the course of the week about the potential inclusion or not of Aidan O'Shea. Unsurprisingly, I think to many, he has been named to start. We will wait and see if the team that has been named is the team that actually takes to the field of play, as tends to be in the GAA now. Tyrone have kept faith with the same starting 15, which beat Kerry in their semi-final. It means that the 2019 All-Star full forward, Cathal McShane, who scored 1-3 off the bench, has been kept in reserve. So we will see how that plays out over the coming days. Coverage of that final, of course, on RT2 tomorrow afternoon. It's also live on Saturday Sport over on RTE Radio 1. Shane Lowry, a very impressive day for him at the BMW Championship at Wentworth. 6 under par round of 66 today moves him to 8 under par, I should say, in 7th place. One would think his Ryder Cup place virtually cemented now. Graham McDowell, 3 under par today to move to 4 under for the tournament. Jonathan Caldwell still on course, 1 under for his round with 14 holes played. He's moved to 2 under par. Cormac Sharvin, 3 under par 69 today. He's 1 over. Padraig Harrington, 2 over par today to sit on 2 over par. The lead there, Kira Dech, Afri Barnrat leads by one shot at 12 under par. So yeah, plenty for us to get stuck into between now and 7 o'clock. We are going to begin by chatting racing. Delighted to say Don McLean is with me in studio. Don, how are you?
Good, thanks. I mean, yeah,
it's good to see you. Thanks for being with us. We're in this deluge of sport, having been barren for so long. We've had the Olympics, the Paralympics, the Euros, everything else. In a way, has Irish Champions Weekend almost crept up upon us?
Yeah, I suppose it has a bit, Damien. It's frequently the way, but I suppose in racing terms, we have been building up to it for a while. It's like, especially the Irish Champions Stakes, it's a race that has been earmarked for St. Mark's Basilica for a little while. Dermot Wells said Turnawa was going to come here a little while ago. Jim Bulger's aiming Poetic Flair there now. He sidestepped another engagement. But yeah, like, it, I suppose the fact that now it's on the same day as the All-Ireland final, yeah, that wasn't the plan originally.
For anyone.
Yeah. But look, it's, as you say, it's some week of sport ahead. But yeah, no, Irish Champions Weekend, it's a massive part
and
of it.
And, you know, we shouldn't get too like lax about it or dismissive about it, six Group 1 races, and probably of most importance to an awful lot of people, 4,000 people allowed in across the weekend, which is going to be massive, not just for those lucky enough to be there, but it's going to create an atmosphere that has been devoid from many sporting landscapes for quite some time.
Yeah, look, we've been very lucky in racing, Damien, that it has it did take a little bit of a break at the very start, but it's been able to continue on behind closed doors because of the nature of the sport. But yeah, like it's been a soulless experience. I've been among the lucky ones who are able to go behind closed doors, but especially the Galway Festival last year, with nobody there, it really was quite an eerie experience. But the last couple of weeks, there have been a couple of hundred people back, which has been great, because a couple of hundred compared to zero is a big increase. Yeah. But no, 4,000 back for Leopardstown tomorrow and the Curragh on Sunday. Yeah, look, it's great.
Can it potentially impact on either, not necessarily a jockey's performance, but a horse's performance? Like, I don't know, Kamir, you know far more about these things than I do. Like, how quickly does it take a horse to become conditioned to relative silence?
It's a good question, because there are some horses who are, by their nature, more highly strung than others.
Yeah.
And some horses who may have benefited from no people there, especially on the big days, because, you know, part of the big days and part of the test of a thoroughbred is to be able to cope with the razzmatazz of a big day and a big crowd and noise. So that hasn't been there for the last couple of years, really.
Yeah.
Year and a half. Well, but yeah, it's back.
Let's get stuck into some of the races. And again, we've six Group 1s. We'll fire through this now to make sure we give value to everything. The Irish Champion Stakes, Leopardstown on Sunday, you've touched on this, the feature race of the weekend. Again, you can look at it on paper and go, ah, it's a shame it's only four runners. And then you delve into the quality of the four runners. It's like saying, oh, Jesus, there's only Ronaldo and Messi on the pitch tonight. So how finely balanced is this now?
It's very finely balanced between the three of them. Like, when we knew that St Mark's Basilica and Turnau and Poetic Flair were in the mix for the race, you kind of thought, if all three make it to the race, regardless of who else shows up, it'll be a hell of a race, and it will be. And there are imponderables about all three. Turnau, she's the filly who won the Breeders' Cup Turf last year, Dermot Wells' filly owned by the Aga Khan, and she was kept in training. She won the Prix de l'Opera as well, over 10 furlongs. She was kept in training this year as a five-year-old with the view to go back and win the Prix de l'Arc de Triomphe. I suppose that's her ultimate aim. The worry about her, she's only had one run this season. She won the Ballyroan Stakes last time very impressively. The worry about her is that she's dropping back down in trip from a mile and a half to 10 furlongs. Now, it's not like she doesn't have pace. She does, but she's so good over 10 furlongs that dropping back down to 10, or over 12 furlongs, dropping back down to 10, it's probably not her optimum trip, for all that she did win the Prix de l'Opera last year over 10 furlongs. And then St Mark's Basilica, he's been a revelation. He won the Dewhurst last year, he won the French Guineas, won the French Derby, won the Eclipse last time. He just had a bit of a setback before the Judman International at York. So it's a case of, if he's back at concert pitch, if he is at concert pitch, and given that he's trained by Aidan O'Brien, there's a fair chance that he will be at concert pitch.
Yeah, if you were to go with that approach of, I'll just go with Aidan O'Brien and Ryan Moore across the weekend, you'll probably do better off.
All right.
Yeah, you'll be on the right side of the ledger. So St Mark's Basilica for you, if I was to force
No, I think Poetic Flair is the value, actually. Bulger's horse. He's the unknown about him is that he's stepping up to 10 furlongs. Yeah. He's so good over a mile, but he'll have his ground. Like, looked like we were going to get a bit more rain than we've got, and Leopardstown's attracted drains very well, so he loves really fast ground. He was really impressive in winning the St James's Palace Stakes and in winning the Guineas at Newmarket earlier in the season. And he finished off his race really well the last time when he was beaten by Palace Pier in France over a mile, suggesting that he could step up and trip, and he could get the 10 furlongs. And on breeding, his glamorous approach is three parts sister, and she won over a mile and a half, so there is every chance that he will get the trip. And if he does, he's 2 for 2 at Leopardstown as well. I just think he's third favourite. I think he should be probably closer to the top two in the betting than he is.
So that's the Irish Champion Stakes, Leopardstown tomorrow. I'm not sure that I say Sunday initially, but it's definitely Leopardstown tomorrow. We'll stay at Leopardstown. The Coolmore America Justify Matron Stakes. These names are getting far too complicated for me. Again, no surprise, Aidan O'Brien, Ryan Moore have Mother Earth as the favourite. Justified?
Yeah, I think so. She's the Guineas winner. She won a Group 1 race in France last year. So she sets the standard. She's a three-year-old as well. And three-year-olds, it's obviously three-year-olds against the older fillies. But three-year-olds do have a really good recent record in the race. So it's understandable that she's favourite. Pearls Galore of Paddy Toomey's. She won through two Group 3 races her last two runs very impressively. So she'd have to step up to win a Group 1 race. But she is a progressive filly, and there's every chance that she could step up. And then you've got like Champers Elise, Johnny Murtha's filly. She won the race last year. She probably hasn't been in the same form this year that she was in last year, but she had a good run last time behind that Canella in the Snow Fairy Stakes. And if she can come forward from that and back at Leopardstown, where she put up the best performance of her life last year in winning the Matron Stakes, then yeah, she could be a coming. She could be a bit of a forgotten filly in the race. But I think Pearls Galore is the one who has the potential to progress and get up to Mother Earth's level.
Okay, for Paddy Toomey and Declan McDonough, we'll go to the Comer Group International Irish St. Ledger, which is the Curragh on Sunday. And again, it's actually frightening when you look at it on paper, the calibre of horses we have. So you've Search for a Song for Dermot Weld, St. Ledger winner in 2019 and 2020, and then you've got last year's Melbourne Cup winner, Twilight Payment, for Joseph O'Brien and Declan McDonough. So are we toss of a coin territory?
Well, look, Twilight Payment, he's 8 years old now, but he won the trial for this race last time, so he's obviously in tremendous form, and as you said, I mean, he won the Melbourne Cup last year, so he doesn't owe anybody anything. But yeah, like, he's favourite. Search for a Song, she won the race as a 3-year-old. She was the first 3-year-old to win it in years, and the way that she won it that day, that was 2 years ago, she raced really keenly early on, but she still had enough in reserve to get home, and then she went and won it last year again as a 4-year-old. Again, she's another filly who just hasn't been in tremendous form this season. She's only run twice though, and she was beaten on soft ground last time at the Curragh in a Group 1 race behind Helvic Dream. But we know that this is her race. This is probably the race that Dermot Weld has been training for her for from early. So she'll probably be at concert pitch for this race. And yeah, she's got a big chance. Sonny Boy Liston is in there as well for Johnny Murthy. He won the Ebor last time, and he's got a few pounds to find on official ratings with the top ones. But again, he's a progressive horse. He won a handicap on this day at this meeting last year, and he does stay a mile and six. So again, he's another one who needs to progress, but he could progress to be up to that level.
Okay, staying at the Curragh on Sunday, the Goff's Vincent O'Brien National Stakes. And again, wide field. Put me back in.
Put Lonsdale, Aidan O'Brien, Ryan Murray. There you go again. Same formula. He's unbeaten, and he's the Guinea's favourite for next year, so it makes sense that he's favourite. Native Trail is coming over from the Godolphin horse, Charlie Appleby's horse, and Ebra River of Hugo Palmer's, who won at the Curragh last time under Shane Foley, won the Phoenix Stakes Group 1 race. An interesting horse in here is Duke DeSessa of Dermot Wells. Colin Keane rides him, and he's only won a maiden. He got beaten at Galway in his first run, but he's only a maiden winner going into a Group 1 race, but he was so impressive in that maiden, and just the vibes from the Dermot Weld yard suggest that he could be a very, very good colt, so he's interesting in a Group 1 race.
Okay, the Darrenstown Stud Flying Five Stakes then.
Yeah, sprint, Winter Power's coming over. She won the Nunthorpe last time, a 3-year-old filly. Glass Slippers won it last year, so given her record and course form, she could run a big race there. I suppose a lot depends on the ground, Damien. If it does rain a little bit, Romantic Proposal of Eddie Lynham, she could come into it. She's a big price, but if it does rain a wee bit, that would be in her favour. Dragon Symbol is over again as well from the Archie Watson yard. So yeah, look, it's a deep, deep field. I'd say Glass Slippers, she's second favourite, but I think she could probably run better than her odds suggest.
We mentioned, you know, at the outset, with everything that's going on, that perhaps, you know, like, it's live, there's a lot of the races are live on radio across the weekend, there's full coverage on RT television as well, that, like, this is the big showpiece weekend of the year. And, like, you know, you go down through it there, it is frightening, the quality that's on your doorstep this weekend.
Yeah, I know. Look, it's a hell of a weekend, Damien. As you say, six Group 1 races over the two meetings. And it's a weekend that's come together. It began in 2014 in its current guise. We did have the races there. The races were there, but...
But some were sceptical back then that this was too big to run over 1 week. You know, how attractive would it be? You know, like, it's... But it has become the showpiece weekend of the year.
It has, and that's, I think that's the advantage of it, that you put all these races together and it's a massive weekend. Trainers can target their horses at this weekend. There are top class races for the top class horses in most disciplines. I suppose it's similar to the Dublin Racing Festival at Leopardstown in February, where they took three meetings and put them together in a weekend, and that's for the National Hunt people. That's a meeting that trainers and people, racegoers target, and this is similar. No, it's a, and you know, it does clash with the St. Ledger at Doncaster, and there's a Group 1 day in France as well, the Arcs Trial day, where Snowfall goes. But yeah, look, it's a massive weekend, and as you said, the fact that there are people coming back, like 4,000 people on each day for the first time in a long time, that creates an extra buzz.
But ultimately, it's about attracting the competition, and we have the competition in Ireland, so you can coax them up or down the road. It's trying to bring people across the water. But, you know, is it ultimately, when you've got St. Ledger, which we'll chat about in a minute, and distractions in France, is it just all about trying to keep this as sustainable as possible in terms of how lucrative it will be? And is that ultimately where we need to keep going with this?
Well, it's a focal point, you know. It's the best horses.
I don't mean to be crude about it, but money talks and horses walk.
Oh, absolutely. When the prize, it's over 4 million in prize money across the board. The Irish Champion Stakes itself is worth a million in prize money, so it's
not
massive
bad for a few minutes work.
And you can understand why people will be attracted there. Yeah.
You've mentioned the St. Ledger at Doncaster tomorrow as well, and again we can't talk about Ryan Moore and Aidan O'Brien unless Ryan Moore has the mother and father of helicopters and COVID restriction exemptions ready. But Aidan runs four in this, and Johnny Murta obviously with a keen interest as well.
Yeah, Aidan O'Brien runs four of them, and they all wear cheek pieces high definition. I suppose he's the most high profile. He was supplemented, he wears cheek pieces for the first time. He was a top class juvenile last year. He hasn't won yet as a 3-year-old, but the fact that they've paid the money to supplement him, the fact that cheek pieces on for the first time, he could improve, and Frankie Dettori takes the ride. But yeah, Johnny Murta has Ottoman Emperor in there, who again is another horse who'll have to improve to get up to Group 1 level, but he won the Gordon Stakes, the Group 3 race at Goodwood last time. He stayed on well that day, and stepping up to a mile and six, if he does stay, he could run a big race. Hurricane Lane is favourite and deserves to be. He's the Irish Derby winner. He won the Grand Prix de Paris last time in France really, really impressively over a mile and a half, and he's bred to even be better over a mile and six. So he's an even money favourite or thereabouts. So he's going to take a lot of beating. But yeah, Ottoman Emperor might be an interesting one against him.
Before we finish, just we've been forced to consume ourselves so much with talk about COVID and how sports have navigated it and everything else. But credit where credit is due. Horse Racing Ireland were the first out the gate. Mm. Literally, with the return to competitive action, in many ways were the barometer against which the IRFU and the FAI and other bodies developed their COVID protocols. And as we come, hopefully, through the other end of the tunnel, they deserve great praise. They have run an unbelievably tight ship, without it, from what I pick up, being overly restrictive.
Oh, no, absolutely. No, it's been, as you say, Damien, it's a credit to the authorities, HRI and IHRB as well. Jennifer Pugh, the Chief Medical Officer for the IHRB, she put the protocols in place. And I suppose that as well, Irish Racing, the stakeholders, they follow them. And the restrictions were tight in the beginning, especially because they needed to be, and Racing needed to show that they could put on the show without, under the restrictions such as they were. And the restriction, they worked. People were in the main healthy, safe. Racing went ahead behind closed doors. Mm. And that was important for the industry to get racing back.
Because there is this perception, and we have spoken about a million euro race over the weekend, but that is the top of the industry.
Exactly.
And that there are plenty of people further down the industry who are so dedicated to doing what they do, but they're not making a million in a year, let alone a million in one race.
Well, that's it. It's an industry that employs 30,000 people countrywide, and a lot of them in rural situations. And racing is the wheel around which it all turns. Like farriers, vets, stable lads, sales companies, breeders, everybody, it all revolves around racing. So when racing stops, everything pauses. So it was important that racing got back quite quickly.
Yeah, brilliant. Enjoy the weekend, if you can. Is it completely frenetic
It's frenetic, it is. But enjoyable frenetic,
Beats being at home watching that.
It does,
Don McLean, thank you very much.
Thanks,
Being with us. Great to hear from Don. As always, we're going to take a quick break. We've got the All-Ireland football final, the weekend soccer, and the US Open tennis still to come.
Green Farm. Get back on track after summer with Green Farm's high protein cooked chicken breast fillet range. Available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
And welcome back to the programme. We are going to chat the All-Ireland final in a minute, says he, scrambling for his script. So, as you're aware, we've been doing 2FM's Flashback Friday with Bernardo's, which has been kindly supported by Dell Technologies. And all across the week, across 2FM, we've been trying to raise as much money as we can for Bernardo's so that they can continue to do what they do for vulnerable children of Ireland. And that is so important. A phenomenal organisation that does phenomenal work for the people that need it most and the people that very often don't have a voice. Right now, Bernardo's is working directly with nearly 18,000 children and their families from across the country. So basically, we have asked you over the course of the week to text WIN to 5300 to donate €4, with Bernardo's receiving a minimum of €3.60. And by texting, you've been entered into a draw to win a family break at the fabulous Ballygarry House Hotel in Tralee, County Kerry. The competition closed earlier, so all day we have been playing playing those 90s tracks you've been texting in your droves in support of Bernardo's. And those that did were automatically entered into that break. And I am delighted to say the winner from Castlereagh in County Roscommon is Michelle Flatley. So Michelle, congratulations to you. I said jokingly before 6 o'clock that I was going to go full 90s. And this is an industry which very often doesn't, you know, there can be an absence of collegiality and we can all be competitive and you can forget that at its core there's decent people involved. And one of the most inherently decent men you will ever meet in radio was the late, great Tony Fenton. And Tony was here for so many years during the 90s. And if you grew up like I did listening to the Hotline, I've been given permission for one night only to go full Tony, who in a situation like this would have gone, Michelle Flatley from Castlereagh in County Roscommon, you're the winner! So I kind of went half Tony. So only Tony can do Tony. So Michelle, congratulations to you and thank you to everyone who was texting to help Bernardo's over the course of the week. Darren O'Sullivan, how are you?
Not too bad, Damien. How are things?
You would have been a religious listener to the Hotline with Tony Fenton back in the day, wouldn't you?
Oh, definitely, yeah.
There you go. I should have got you to scream with me because they're looking at me in the window now going, who's this lunatic screaming in an empty room? Kamir, thanks for being with us. We have had the teams named for the final. Now, I kind of said jokingly earlier, the teams named insofar as we can trust these things in the modern era of Gaelic games. So, Enda Hessian replacing Owen McLaughlin, who unfortunately misses out as a result of his broken jaw for Mayo. Brian Wald starting in place of Darren McHale and Tyrone going unchanged from the team that beat Kerry. If they are the starting 30 players when the ball is in the air at 5 o'clock tomorrow, would it surprise you in any way, shape or form?
No, it wouldn't, to be honest. Of the two teams, I don't think either of them actually do that much messing around with teams, so it wouldn't surprise me. I suppose the biggest question for me was on the Tyrone side, if Colin McShane would come into the starting 15. And to be fair, he's been making such a good impact off the bench. They would have been taking something away from their game plan by starting him. So no, I'm not surprised. And I wouldn't be surprised if they were the way they lined out.
Just in terms of when it sits down to select that, and you can talk about this, you know, we can go for these cliches and we can go on for all this philosophy around, do you start with your strongest or do you try and finish with your strongest? But when you look at the scores in particular that the Tyrone bench have generated over the course of the championship, now McShane in a way was the freak of that with 1-3 off the bench in the win over Kerry. But, you know, it is an unbelievable reserve to have there at your disposal if a game is getting tight coming down the track.
Yeah, and even, like, I even look at someone like Colin McShane who, from the outset, looks like he has a good personality and a fella who will thrive on that responsibility of being the fella to take the game offline. And I think sometimes that gets overlooked. Like, when the game is going to be in the melting pot the last 10 or 15 minutes, you want a big personality, somebody who wants the ball, who wants to take that shot on. And he looks to me like a fella who wants that pressure, wants that responsibility to do it. So that's the other thing. You can have fellas who are good come off the bench another day, but when it comes to an All-Ireland final, last 10 or 15 minutes, that's when the pressure's on. He looks like a fella who would demand the ball. And that's going to be a big decision for management in their thinking.
Yeah, the one that's kind of bemused me ever so slightly over the course of the week is that, like, great players won't always play great games. And Aidan O'Shea, it just didn't fall his way in the game against Dublin. And to be fair to James Horan, made a big decision to give his captain the hook in a game. But did you ever expect Aidan O'Shea's name not to appear on the starting lineup?
No, and look, to be honest, I reckon half the reason why there was even talk about it was because there was very little talk of anything else. There hadn't been much hype around it. For me, Aidan Shea was a guaranteed starter, and I expect Aidan to have a big game the last day. Even the best players in the world have bad days, and he had a bad day in the semi-final, but he's still a huge part of that team. He's a big leader in that team, and taking him out of that team would be a huge loss to Mayo. So he was always going to start for me, and I expect him to have a big game this weekend.
This is unbelievably tight to call, and it's been quite some time since we've had a final that, like, okay, I know some of them have ended on very, very tight score lines, but they've tended to go with favouritism. There's an unbelievably strong case to be made for both these teams this weekend.
Yeah, and look, when I take off my Kerry hat, it's actually brilliant. GM must be absolutely rubbing their hands together with this, because you have two teams that, look, let's call a spade, nobody expected them to get there. Everyone expected Dublin to be there, and people had this feeling that Kerry were going to be the ones to take the crown off them. And from a pure GA point of view, this is brilliant. You have two teams, nobody can call it. And I just think the way this is going to open it up for everyone going forward, it's brilliant for the game.
Yeah, and, you know, is this a sign of things to come, do you think? Because, like, again, and you're talking about it from a Kerry perspective, I'm talking about it from a Dublin perspective. Like, you know, you never dismiss an All-Ireland, but, like, it had got so stale.
Yeah, it had. Look, it got boring. You even see with the Dublin players that are opting out, that's down to boredom. You know, like, there was no thrill in it, I don't think, anymore. And that's even the team that are winning. So imagine being part of the other teams that are losing. So I think it's brilliant. Like that, we're going to have a new champion. The likes of Dublin are going to come back stronger next year. You hope Kerry brings something new. But other counties are going to build on this score. Dublin aren't unbeatable. Mm. We're as good as a Mayo or a Tyrone or a Kerry on our day. And it just opens it up. I just think it gives people more hope going into it that we're not a million miles away from winning the All-Ireland.
So then, objectively speaking, for the GAA or for Gaelic football around the country, would a Mayo victory be the far better outcome than a Tyrone victory, just in terms of the history and the weight and the near misses and everything else?
I think for the GAA public, it probably would be better, because I think we're all sick of hearing about the long wait and the curse and everything else. So I do think that. But to be honest, I think no matter who wins, it's going to be good for the GAA. Mm. Personally, I'd like to see Mayo win it. I'd like to see him get over the line. I'd like to see the likes of Lee Keegan hitting O'Shea, getting that medal that they've been working so hard to get. But that's not the way it goes. Whoever wins tomorrow evening, I think it's going to be good for the GAA. Because realistically, this Tyrone team, they're in a transition. They're in a transition period in their first year under new management. And they could be top of the pile at the end of it, which would be a phenomenal achievement.
Who do you expect to come out on top then, and why?
I've been tipping Mayo from long before the Dublin game, fairly vocally down in my own place down here in the bar restaurant. But initially after the Tyrone Kerry game, I turned and then I watched the game back, and I'm going to go sick with Mayo. I just think they've got great energy, great pace, and even a part of me was saying, geez, a Mayo game would have suited. They would have preferred to play Kerry. Thought it would have caused Kerry a lot of problems. But at the same time, Kerry Randall had a ball against Tyrone, and they create a lot of chances. I don't think Mayo will cough up goals like Kerry did. And if you don't cough up goals against them, are they going to hit 20 points? I don't think so. Kerry created an awful lot of scoring chances against Tyrone, and on another day they would have taken more. So I'm just leaning towards Mayo. It is one of them ones I could wake up in the morning and change my mind, but I'm going with Mayo. I've a gut feeling about it for quite a while, and I think they can do it this year.
I've loads of people texting in and tweeting in who want to talk about Ultimate Hell Week. Now, I know your hands are probably tied in. Actually, the most important thing about Ultimate Hell Week is you're looking to raise cash for the Irish Heart Foundation, and people can text recruit 14 to 50300, which is voting for you. Am I right in saying? Did I get that right?
Yeah, that's it, yeah. And see? I did look, the main thing is that, I suppose, if people are enjoying the show, it's great, and it's great to get great reviews. But the big thing is, I suppose, what we all did it was for charity. So if people are able to throw a few bob towards my own charity, the Irish Heart Foundation, or the other charities of the guys involved, that makes it even better for us.
How well have you looked after yourself post-retirement?
Probably better than when I was still playing. Like, yeah, I train probably more. It's weird. I enjoy training. I enjoy different style of the training, so like I was in good shape, but I quickly found out physical fitness is only a small percentage of it. It was just a different world. It was like an assault on the senses, from the first minute, and something I'd never experienced, to be honest. And, like simple tasks all of a sudden were very confusing.
Yeah, I was listening to Ray Goggins, who people who've watched the programme will know. He's the man who's putting you through, the ex-Irish Army Ranger who's putting you through hell, quite literally. He was on the Two Johnnies podcast during the week and just talking about the, you know, thinking the elite sportsman would be quite ready, but it's that psychological thing is unlike anything you've ever had to deal with before. And like, again, I know it's obviously up and running and you're very limited in what you can talk about, but like, mentally, you've never faced anything, I'd imagine, the like of which these guys put you through.
No, and like that, I'm actually currently reading Ray's book.
It's fascinating. It's brilliant.
It's hard to put it down at night. But for me, like, I'd be fairly relaxed, guy. Even going into big games, I remember going from the hotel to Croke Park on the bus, and I'd be dozing off for a little nap. Whereas this was just a different level of being on edge and being anxious. You just didn't know what was going on. like I said, simple tasks were very confusing. The discipline of it all, being on edge all the time, it really was. Like, I don't even think TV would show how intense it was. And like, the physical challenges are obviously tough, and they're physical, and you have to have a level of fitness, but it's everything else. It's even the personal admin, packing a bag, all of a sudden became the biggest job in the world. So yeah, look, it was one of them ones I'd have, I wish I'd read his book before it.
you would have said no when the phone call came.
Yeah, and like, even another thing, like, I took off, if I was young and I didn't know what I wanted to do in school, how great it would have been to go off to the army. Whereas it wasn't, just for the challenge of it, really, because even reading his book and the different challenges he always got to prepare for and challenge myself with, it's a fascinating lifestyle.
Mm. Come here, before I let you go, there will be an expectation that I'll ask you about the situation in Kerry. What's your feeling? Will there be a change in manager, or will Peter be there for next year? It's the Jack O'Connor situation has kind of piled extra pressure on everyone involved, I would think.
Yeah, I think so. Look, my gut feeling was that Peter would very luckily get another year in charge. I thought they'd just give him an extra year on the basis that two of his 3 years had been COVID interrupted. I think with Jack pulling out of the Kildare job, it puts pressure on the county board, because you do have a ready-made replacement ready to go. It's a great opportunity to bring in one of the younger former players that we have now that are dipping their toe into management, and giving them a role with Jack that they can learn the ropes. So it's going to be a big one like that. You're listening to rumours, and for a long time I was just thinking, no, Peter will get it for the extra year. But you just don't know. I couldn't see Jack giving up the Kildare job if he didn't feel he had a fierce chance of getting that Kerry job again. So, my personal thing is, they need to have this done and dusted by the end of September, start of October, so the players know exactly what's ahead of them.
Yeah, big time. I think a lot of people will agree with that. Darren, good to chat to you as always. Thanks for being with us.
Cheers, Eamon.
Darren
Thanks.
O'Sullivan with us there. Plenty more still to come. Soccer to come after the break.
Game on 2FM. With Green Farm. Healthy dinners made easy with Green Farm's high protein cooked chicken breast fillets range. Available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on. Football.
And you're very welcome back to the programme. An awful lot to get stuck into. Have been joined in studio by Paul Curry. Paul, how are you?
I'm very good, Damien.
It's good to see you, as always. We've put the world to rights about the League of Ireland and everything during the ad break. So, you know, one of those conversations we're probably better off not having had on the radio, because we get ourselves into trouble. Fergal Brennan is with us as well. Hiya, Fergal.
Hello, how you doing?
Not too bad. Good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us. We've an awful lot to get stuck into. I suppose the place we have to start, whether I want to or not, is with the return of Ronaldo. Man United playing host to Newcastle tomorrow afternoon, the 3 o'clock kickoff. It's manna from heaven for the BBC and for radio stations across the UK, because it's not on the TV, so people might actually discover that the BBC do live football commentary. Anyway, here's what Ole Gunnar Solskjaer had to say about Ronaldo today.
I think everyone's very, very happy to have him back, and he can speak for himself, but he seems like he's happy to be back as well. The mood's been very good, he's worked well, and we're looking forward to Saturday, of course, and he will definitely be on the pitch at some point, that's for sure.
Yeah, probably carrying a water bottle or something. And another Fergal, just like, there's obviously been the excitement. We've seen the queues out the door for the superstar down Matt Busby Way and everything else. But in footballing terms, pure and simple, how big an impact can we expect Ronaldo to make on Man United this season?
I think huge, particularly in terms of how Solskjaer has spoken about him and what he intends to make of him in the months ahead. Obviously, as you mentioned, financially and in terms of the interest around the club and shirt sales and positivity amongst fans, that's plain to see. But on the pitch, he will improve them. I think, obviously, as a player, his position has obviously changed in the last couple of years. He's more of an out-and-out goal scorer now. United will be expecting him to do the bulk of his work and the best of his work inside the box. And I think in terms of when chances fall his way, he will be expected to stick them away. He will be expected to get at least double figures, possibly even pushing 20 goals in the Premier League this season if he's to meet their objectives. The crucial aspect of all this comes down to getting the service to him, and that's going to be the big challenge for Solskjaer and his coaches in terms of altering and tweaking tactically how United set up and the other players in the team, because at the moment, the way that United play is maybe not necessarily conducive to a Ronaldo-type striker. They've got a very quick and fluid front three, whether it's Rashford, Greenwood, or Sancho coming in, Cavani playing at a slightly different role. Dan James, who's obviously now moved on to Leeds, was a part of that. With Ronaldo in there, they've got someone that will look to play within the parameters of the 18-yard box. So you'll see Luke Shaw and Aaron Wan-Bissaka on the other side looking to get forward more, looking to get balls into the box, be that crosses for him to win headers or cutbacks for him to get across a defender and finish. So I think expectation will be high in terms of what he can do, drive United on maybe another step further to really challenge Man City and Chelsea and Liverpool and maybe make a splash in the Champions League as well. But it will be fascinating to see exactly how these United players that have grown into themselves in the last 12 or 18 months react when they're now being told everything you're doing is great, but we need you to just tweak it a little bit because we need to get the best out of him.
Yeah, and Paul, when we look at, we develop it in terms of the culture, and if you look at United, either by accident or design, have come up with this situation where you've got one of Ferguson's disciples is the manager. They've brought back Mike Phelan, they've brought back Darren Fletcher, Michael Carrick, all of these old Ferguson former players. There is that sense that this is the missing piece or the most important piece in the jigsaw in terms of what impact he will have on the culture of excellence and determination within the dressing room.
Yeah, and I think if you speak to many Man U fans, that's probably the impact that they're looking beyond the performances on the pitch is what sort of impact can he have with the others around him and how much can he get out of those players to breach the gap that has existed between the likes of Man City and Liverpool over the last number of seasons. He's a born winner. You know, that's going to be instrumental with regards to the changing room and the culture, and Manchester United need to be winning trophies, and they haven't done that for the last number of years. So from that non-playing point of view, Damien, of course this is going to be a massive signing for Manchester United. Just to touch on what Fergal's saying there, though, I still think there's a challenge with regards to fitting the players in and around him. And if you look at how, even if you were to look at the Ireland game most recently, Bruno Fernandes and Cristiano Ronaldo haven't linked up particularly well on an international in international games, and that would be somewhat of a worry. In the last European campaign, I was reading a piece earlier, there was 12 goals between Ronaldo and Bruno. Ronaldo had 11, Bruno had 1, and there was no assists between Bruno and Ronaldo, which you would expect in that kind of final third off the pitch. So I think there's a bit of work to do there. You're going to put a few people's noses out of place with Mason Greenwood, who started so well in the number 9, going out wide. But when you go back to just his character, his mentality, his professionalism, that's of course going to be huge with regards to the dressing room, the club, getting Manchester United back to where they need to be. But from a playing point of view, I think Ole has pressure there to fit everything together.
Okay, so we know Ronaldo will be in action when United host Newcastle tomorrow afternoon. That's the 3 o'clock kickoff. We're not 100% sure. Will any of the Brazilian contingent be in action for Liverpool away to Leeds at the weekend? Or likewise, we talked about this earlier in the week on the programme, Man City and some of the other clubs which are affected as a result of the Brazilian Federation and a couple of the Central American associations basically invoking this 5-day rule because the players missed out on international action. So Jurgen Klopp and Liverpool affected with the potential absence of Roberto Firmino, Alisson and Fabinho this weekend. Here's what Jurgen Klopp had to say today.
Then the only thing what the FIFA and CONMEBOL did together, they decided we not only have an international break, that's clear, they have games, but let me put in another match day. We should not forget that. There was they played this morning at 1:30. And Brazil, by the way, in our case, it's Brazil. In other team, and for other clubs, it's other countries. But you know, Brazil won all three games in that international break. But still, there's a complaint to the FIFA, and the FIFA tells us now that we are obviously in the moment. I don't know exactly what's going on in the moment, that we cannot play the players. When before the last international break, we had that meeting with, I had that meeting with Arsene Wenger. And unfortunately, I don't know the name of the other guy of the FIFA, but we had a meeting when they showed me the plans for the World Cup. And when in that moment, I got the message from our guys, there's no exemption from the government for the players. And all three people in the room agreed, yeah, of course, then the players cannot go. So, and now we have that situation. So this is the situation, and we don't know, still don't know who we can line up in the weekend, but that's the smallest problem of all the problems, because in next time, we don't know how the pandemic develops. There are maybe 10, 15 other countries on a red list. I hope it's not the case, but we cannot ignore that it's possible. And if that happens, then the same problem again with all the players, and we will still think then, okay, the clubs and the players have to get the punishment in the end for something we are absolutely not influential in. And that's for sure not right.
Fergal, it took him a while, but he made a very good point in the end that effectively this comes down to one side, the clubs trying to protect their interests, the international teams trying to protect their interests, and ultimately FIFA is going to have to decide which of their two lovers they're torn least against.
Yeah, and this issue goes back not just in the last 24 or 48 hours. It goes back to before the international break was called, as Klopp mentioned in the clip there. And Jurgen Klopp, Pep Guardiola, a number of other Premier League managers, La Liga managers, Serie A managers all raised this point that even if there were not issues on the ground in Brazil in terms of changing of legislation or quarantine or COVID-19 guidelines, it was always going to be a really difficult situation to get their players back, get them back in time, that they were rested, that they were fit, injury-free, had obviously returned negative COVID-19 tests. All of those things were always going to be really, really difficult. And something that Klopp has mentioned there that was almost snuck in through the back door is this additional international fixture that was kind of crammed in and not really talked about prior to the start of the international break. And in terms of planning for these games and getting these players fit, Premier League clubs are very, very slick operations in terms of logistics and making sure that everything is in place. And Klopp's press conference, I covered it this morning, Guardiola said a similar thing, that they simply don't know. They've got multi-million pound Premier League footballers and they don't know 1 hour to the next whether they're going to be back, whether they're going to be legally allowed to come out of isolation, whether they're going to be able to play. That is how tight this is. And the Brazilian FA in particular, I know obviously there's been comments made about other South American FAs and nations in Central America, but the Brazilian FA have effectively turned around to these clubs and to FIFA and said, we don't care because the international windows are over for now until October. We've got what we needed from these players. They've come. Brazil have been excellent during the international window. They've got an unbeaten record in World Cup qualification. It's your problem now, clubs. We're going to pass the problem. We're going to pass this situation back to the clubs. And Klopp is quite rightly very angry. So is Guardiola. So is another string of managers because they warned about this. They prefaced this 2-3 weeks ago and they were ignored then and they've been ignored right the way through this situation.
Yeah, and like Paul, when you develop it and you can see very credible arguments on both sides of the fence. The thing that kind of gets me a little bit is the fact that the Brazilians have exempted Richarlison and Everton from it just shows that this is purely a political play, and it's the sense of, you know, good old natured badness about that. But it's not the easiest ones for FIFA to clamp down on or rectify.
It's difficult and it's a manager's worst nightmare, these international breaks. And like Klopp touched on, you don't know when you're getting them back, the distance they have to travel, the time zones they're travelling across. So it's a bit of a predicament for FIFA but also for the clubs. Personally, I think it seems very harsh on the likes of Liverpool and Chelsea and the other clubs who are going to miss out and having their players absent due to international duty. Brazil have operated okay without these players. I know they need to set a precedent going forward, but I think given the nature of COVID, the travelling protocols, it's very, very messy for players not to travel. Seems like a lot of sense from a club point of view anyway.
Fergal, just very quickly before we let you go, just some of the questions that we'll see answered across the weekend. I suppose we're looking at Spurs. Can they maintain this great start to the season? They're away to Crystal Palace in the early game tomorrow. The other big fixture that stands out is Arsenal against Norwich and just how badly things can go for Mikel Arteta. What else stands out for you across the weekend?
I think obviously those two that you point out are going to be key ones, but Leicester at home to Manchester City, which is in that 3 o'clock block with United against Newcastle tomorrow, is going to be huge. Pep Guardiola is obviously annoyed about the situation with players returning from South America, and Leicester have always maintained this kind of aura around them when they won the Premier League and in the seasons after of this undercard, that they love to be the underdog in these situations. They know they've got a huge amount of talent, particularly at home, fans back at the King Power Stadium in Leicester. They'll really want to make a splash, and they've got a good record against Manchester City. Vardy in particular, his goal record I think is 10-12 or there or thereabouts against City. Pep Guardiola's always full of praise for him. This is definitely one to watch out for because Manchester City have been so dominant over the last few years, but Leicester whether it's in the head or whether it's out on the pitch, they do seem to have a little bit of an edge on them, and this could be a big, big test for Pep and his players.
Fergal, thanks very much for being with us. Fergal Brennan there joining us. We're going to, Paul, chat League of Ireland. We look at tonight's games, Derry City at home to Finn Harps, which is always tasty. It's one of the best derbies around, probably doesn't get the attention it quite deserves. Drogheda at home to Bowes, Sligo at home to St. Pat's is the live game on RTE. They're all kicking off at 7:45. Shamrock Rovers at home to Waterford. We look at it, Rovers 50 points level with St. Pat's, but two games in hand, obviously coming into this off the back of a defeat to Finn Harps last time round, and despite being, you know, everyone's runaway favourites for the leagues, an awful lot of questions have been asked about Stephen Bradley and his squad the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's a couple of players in the squad there having maybe seeds of doubt in their brain about how they've been playing over the last number of weeks, because, you know, typically when you look back at Rovers over the last 12, 18 months, they've played with a fluidity and an intensity in their game, and that seems to have, it's like the energy and the legs have been sucked out of them, Damien, and they've of course missed a few players in important games. But when you look at the Bowes game and then the Finn Harps game, I thought they were outplayed, and that's not something that you would have said a lot over the last while, and that will be of concern, particularly with Waterford, who have picked up quite a bit since the break. So they can go to Tala tonight knowing that there'll be a bit of doubt within those Shamrock Rovers players, and if they were to go in front, there could be a bit of tension there and potentially, you know, nick a result. But with the strength and depth they have, you'd have to imagine that Shamrock Rovers will kick back into form. See, sooner rather than later,
that's the key issue. You look at like St. Pat's in second place, Sligo like 11 points back then from St. Pat's in second to Sligo in third. Like, it's very hard. You can ask all the questions you want about Shamrock Rovers, but it's very hard to see a credible argument as to where a realistic challenge is going to come, particularly if that Pat squad gets a couple of injuries.
And Pat's, that was always the concern, Damien, was that the strength and depth just wasn't there, and they've actually done well in the last number of weeks. They lost the likes of Robbie Benson and John Mountney, experienced players in that squad, and they've still managed to pick up points. How much longer can they do that with the tight squad that they have? That's the question mark that would exist out there. But if Bowes, for instance, weren't so poor in the opening two rounds of fixtures, with the form they've picked up, particularly off the back of Europe, you would definitely fancy them to latch on to Shamrock Rovers. But the gap is probably too big, and you would imagine the way it plays out is that Shamrock Rovers pull away from St. Pat's. But the form they've shown the last few weeks, it's hard to know. And if Pat's were to beat Sligo tonight, that could kick them on again. So there's still a bit of football to be played. There's still different scenarios that could come out of you know, the next round of fixtures. But the money is on Shamrock Rovers to go ahead.
And you know, you say there, if Bowes hadn't started so badly, if Rory Higgins had been with Derry a couple of weeks earlier, like, there's all these ifs and buts. Just on Bowes, because the expectation that's on them, you know, there's the potential, if you get past Manu, to really advance and put a really strong, which they'd be expected to do, strong cup campaign to play. But you're back into that situation where it's almost counterproductive to be in Europe, because Bowes now have 22 games played, teams ahead of them have 25, 26, 24. Like, this backlog with a small squad is going to work against you.
Yes, but you could flip that on its head, Damien, and said if they'd started the season better, you know, they'd be in the top three and you'd have nothing to worry about. And if they'd shown the form that they've shown over the last number of weeks, we wouldn't be having question marks about the fixture congestion with Europe. But Bowes have built something really, really good there. Like you mentioned with the FAI Cup, over the last number of years, the one thing that's probably missing is a trophy. And if they can focus on the FAI Cup and secure European football, which is so important to build within the League of Ireland, well, they're certainly on the right path with the players that they're bringing through and the project that Trevor has put in place there.
Very, very quickly, a good week for Stephen Kenny?
Oh, God.
I'm just wondering, like, there seems to be this sense that the atmosphere and the show of support and the connection between the fans and the team, the last game, has sent a real message to the people in power that this is what we want to see.
I think so, and I was always realistic. I can't get over some of the reactions of certain fans. I was realistic at the beginning of the campaign. It was always going to take time. It's great to see new players come to the fore. It's great to get a result. The Azerbaijan result, of course, was disappointing, but if you're asking me, I think it was a positive campaign, and it's definitely something we can build on.
Yeah, Paul, thanks as always. Paul Corrywood is there. We're going to take a quick break and chat tennis.
With Green Firm. Fuel your day with Green Firm's high protein cooked chicken breast fillet. 100% natural and packed with flavour. Game on.
Tennis. We're going to finish the programme by looking ahead to the US Open finals weekend. Stephen Higgins from Cross Court View is with us. Stephen, if you had a crystal ball and a good bank account at the start of this, nobody would have predicted the women's final that we have. It's brilliant finish to a brilliant championship.
Yeah, I absolutely agree there. It's funny, in the men's section, you would say three of the four semi-finalists were quite predictable. In the women's, no one was going to be expecting the world number 150 to be playing the world number 73, with Raducanu only playing her second Grand Slam ever. So yeah, it's completely unprecedented. The tournament has been sensational. A great remedy for the times as hopefully things improve. But the two women, I mean, the run of Fernandez to beat Naomi Osaka, the defending champion, Angie Kerber, the former world number one and a former champion, Elina Svitolina, top five player, Arina Sabalenka, top five player, back to back in four matches, let alone what Raducanu's done, is extraordinary.
Fernandez to seal the deal?
Well, I mean, sure, what's even the point of making predictions? Sure. We've been completely wrong the entire time. It could go either way. They're both extraordinarily impressive, composed and complete players, actually. Okay. I think that's what's unbelievable about them.
Tennis is the big winner. Who's going to contest the men's final?
It's very hard to look past, obviously, Novak Djokovic trying to make his ninth final, although his record at the US Open is actually the worst of the four. So I think if you're picking of who is fit to play, the worst run possibly for Djokovic would be Zverev tonight and Daniel Medvedev in the final. So while he's obviously the favourite to try compete this historic calendar Grand Slam, don't rule out a surprise against either Zverev, who beat him for the Olympic gold medal, and don't think he didn't want to win that, or Medvedev, who knows the score in finals. This would be his third final if he makes it, and he has been outstanding throughout the tournament.
Brilliant. Fantastic stuff, Stephen. Thanks for being with us. Short and sweet, but we got all the stuff in that we needed to get in. Stephen Higgins there from Cross Court View. News on that across the weekend. Time for us to depart. Blonnet is on the way with the chart show. Laura Lee Davies was our broadcast coordinator tonight. The programme produced by Ronan Lawler. From Damien O'Mara, till we chat again. Good night.